accused of doing everything from ruining a toaster and electric irons and things like that with my AM radio. So I can say, keeping a low profile, and I'm very happy that my antennas are not easily seen. And you know, less attraction overall is the best way for, I think, AM radio operators to act. So ringing bells is just not my, as they say, my cup of tea, Dick. All right, I think what we should do is finish up this thing on filters, because I've been getting questions galore on filters, so maybe we could tackle this business about filters. Rich mentioned Collins filter, et cetera, Dick, over.
And boy, there's a zillion kinds of filters we can add to our receivers. So you tell me how you think we should start approaching filters. You've been down that road. You put forth a heroic effort to make a state-of-the-art filter. So you know what a filter looks like, a good one. You know what you were replacing. And what's your guess as to the right way to get the information across based on what the questioner was asking? Over to you, Mel.
Basically, let's talk about types of filters. There are, I could say, a number of them on the market. The filters that are advertised as the add-ons to your transceivers of today, these are the IF stage filters. In other words, these are these small little rectangular type devices you'll see it, that they add, that they have in the ads, and they are added to the inside of the radio. And most of them are in the what we call the 8, 9, and 455 kilohertz range. And you must know which ones match your particular radio. They're not interchangeable. Whether you must know whether 8, 9, or 450 kilohertz range of the filter type before you can install it. So in other words, you can't go to one manufacturer and say, oh, he's got the same filter that I'm looking for, but will it work in my radio? So you want to expand on that a little bit? Over.
Yes. Modern-day good radios are usually dual conversion. In other words, the radio signal on, let's say, 21 megacycles comes into the RF amplifier, hits the mixer, gets converted down to the first IF frequency, quite frequently is 8 or 9 megacycles. That frequency was chosen because it's an innocent frequency where there's not a whole lot of stuff going on, so to speak. It's an unused frequency in many areas, not always. And then you've got a filter at 8 or 9 megacycles that hopefully lets through only that frequency and rejects the local oscillator, the image, rejects a whole lot of other things that are going on inside of that mixer. And those things are going on inside that mixer, particularly if you're in a tough environment, like, say, for instance, a field day site where you got a bunch of tents that are all within a couple hundred feet of each other and a whole lot of high-power transmitters are banging away. So the quality of that first filter, its skirt selectivity, its bandwidth, does matter. And on many receivers, there's a second conversion. 8 or 9 megacycles then gets converted down to either 455 KC or 267 KC, but I think 455 is a very popular number. So making sure your filter is on the right center frequency, and hopefully your manufacturer's owner's manual tells you that. That's one of the first criteria. The second criteria is, will the filter you're about to buy and install, if it's not recommended as the exact replacement by the manufacturer of your receiver, you then got to worry about, does it have the right physical layout? Is it the right size that it's going to squeeze onto the printed circuit board? Are the input and output leads in the right place that'll solder onto the board? If not, you're going to have to do some fairly difficult adapting. Amateurs have done that, but it just adds one more degree of complication. So the right frequency, the right physical layout. The next thing you got to worry about is insertion loss. There are some beautiful filters that have more insertion loss than others. This is less likely, but you got to be concerned with that. Hopefully you've read some kind of a product report telling you about the quality of the filter you're about to install.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Just because somebody said that this is a great filter, and it's an unknown company, taking some risk. It'd be nice if one of your buddies that you talk to on the air says, yes, that particular filter you're buying, I know somebody who used it, he loves it, it's not too expensive, it got delivered on time, and it's great. It'd be nice if you can get a testimonial before you choose a filter. And you're going to have a whole lot of choices as to whether or not the filter should be Crystal Lattice, Collins Mechanical, LC, Digital Signal Processing. Even once you select the frequency and the bandwidth and other characteristics and the right brand name, you've got some other choices as to which is the best filter for you. And I didn't say it's easy. You're going to have to do some research. And what we're talking about here is improving the performance of your receiver. Your whole reason for putting in another filter is because you want to be more narrow, more broad, steeper skirt, better rejection, better 60 dB bandwidth ratio, less ring, flatter response, less group delay distortion, which occasionally happens. With audio, it's not likely, but occasionally happens. So there are a number of characteristics to worry about before you just dive into the water and pay a whole lot of dollars and select a filter and hope it's all going to work out right. Go a little bit slow is my suggestion. K2KEY, K2LIW.
This is K2KEY. Let me expand upon this. Most all the transceivers today, they, of course, list the optional filters. Another reason you can't interchange them, even if the IF is correct, is because they're all plug-in. There is no soldering involved in any of them today. So if you do not have the same pin configuration, they will not be able to go in. Don't try bending things on all because you'll destroy it. Either ruin the filter or do some damage to the printed circuit board, which today are a little bit, on the critical side. Most of the components you'll find is surface-mounted technology. Can't take a heck of a lot of abuse, so you've got to get the filter that, like I say, recommended for the radio. Now, as Dick was just saying, now you got these filters that are basically we're talking about right now. We're talking about filters with fixed bandwidth. So let me drop and I'll say a few words about that. Okay, your filters you'll see in the selection usually go from 3.1 to about 1.8. kilohertz, and that is for single sideband. You'll see 500 hertz to 250 hertz for CW, and you'll see like 5 or 6 kilohertz for AM operation. Now, again, Dick made a very good point that you've got to really listen yourself. Listening to extreme filters sometimes may not be what you want because if you were to take, for instance, a 1.8 kilohertz filter and listen to it on single sideband, you may find that ultra narrow 1.8 filter kills the audio. In other words, you don't get that full bodied audio, and that's what I alluded to before, and you start to get this what we call the Wolfman Jack effect, where it's very harsh to listen to, and after a while, you're just going to switch it out. Let it drop. Oh, again. Now, same thing with CW. A 250 hertz CW filter also can give you this ultra-narrow effect again, where you will find it maybe fatiguing to listen to, especially you'll have to wear headphones because it will be too harsh from the speaker. So, again, you got to, listen to, if you can. I know after you purchase it, you're stuck with it, but these are some of the things to try to maybe look for when you're purchasing a filter. And now we'll get into different types of filters, different selection. Anything you want to add to this, Dick?
I like what I hear so far. Keep going.
Ace, I'm trying to think to take this step by step because I've got so many questions about this. Now, crystal filters. Okay. Crystals, nice little devices, been around for a while, and they are precise. Most crystals today, or for many years, have been, in fact, a lot of people don't know of one of our successful communications and the winning of World War II is because we did have something that the enemy did not have, and that was precise crystals, which made our communications very effective. But that's a whole other story. Now, precise control of the frequencies and in oscillator circuits and all, and they are also many times the so-called main components used in IF filters for transceivers. And they have a tendency, they will pass signals at the crystal frequency and basically reject at other frequencies. But because crystals act basically as sharp, what we call sharp-tuned circuits, and we must pass usually a number of frequencies, that is also why we have to add capacitors and resistors into what we call these different types of ladder filters. Before I go any further, if you want to add to this, Dick?
Yeah, we're into another area here, and that is the impedance match of the filter. You've got to worry a little bit. It's not a showstopper, but if your filter was designed, I'm not sure the exact numbers, but if your filter was designed to go into a circuit that presented to it a 600 ohm resistive impedance, and if the design of your radio is such that it presents 1,000 ohms or 300 ohms, the filter will behave differently. This is a long shot as to whether or not this is a problem, but what is the standard impedance that IF filters on either 455 or 8K, 8 megacycles or 9 megacycles, 8 megahertz, 9 megahertz? Is there a standard impedance that the filter is supposed to be presented with, and have you seen that as a specification from either the radio or the filter point of view? Over to you, Mel.
No, this is K2KEY. No, they don't give you that. The filters, as I said, are fixed. You have no control over anything on the filter other than installing it. But when you look at the types of filters, see, now we're going to the types. They do offer several different types. Now, we're talking about crystal filters, and crystal filters, to widen the range of frequencies that can pass through a crystal filter, the parts that they put in there, the capacitors and the resistors, actually determine then whether this is going to be a CW, an SSB, or an AM signal type filter. So, and there's where the problem begins with crystal filters. If you wipe the crystal filter, and this is, I found out from an experimentation, if you wipe a signal, a single crystal's response curve, and say to achieve now what we call the minus 6 dB bandwidth, which causes then excessive, what we call excessive skirt flare, on a strong signal, say, at like the minus 60 dB. Now, I know this is going to be a little confusing, what I'm talking about, but this is the pitfall of a number of these filters. You've got to see, they usually give you this specification that is drawn, that the skirt response shows you from the minus 6 dB to the minus 60 dB, and what the skirt flare looks like. This determines a number of factors. You want to make a comment on this, Dick? Maybe not, didn't explain it correctly, over.
Now, I see where you're going with this one, Mel. The whole reason why you replace the filter is either you want a very different bandwidth, like, say, for instance, 250 or 500 hertz, you're adding another filter, hopefully it's selectable from the front panel, so you're adding an auxiliary filter so you can get CW reception when you didn't have a filter that favors that before, or the filter that's there, you're trying to change its bandwidth or its quality. The filter that's used very frequently on these radios is 2.1 kilohertz. And it's a medium good quality filter. But because you do a lot of pile-up work with de-expeditions on 20 meters and you want a 1.8 kilohertz filter, and you want one with very steep skirts, that means that the difference in bandwidth at 6.0 dB down from center, or 60 dB down response, 60.0, you want that to be a very small ratio. That's a steep skirted filter. And if you were designing the filter yourself, and I think the majority of these guys are not going to be doing that, Mel. I think the majority of these guys are buying the filter. Therefore, that 6 to 60 dB ratio is something that hopefully is on the data sheet. And hopefully they know what they're looking for ahead of time to know that they're buying the right filter. And that's a matter of asking for a testimonial from your friends, reading the right literature. You're going to tell us, Mel, on your next transmission, what's the approximate price of these quality filters. I'll be amazed if you can get a good quality filter for less than $75 or $100. And to some ham radio operators, that's a medium big investment on a receiver that you already own just to make this improvement. So you got to be a little bit sure that you're putting the money in the right place. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Very good point, the cost. All right, we'll get to that in a second. Now, what about the difference? Now, you'll notice that they will have several crystal filters for sale for that possible radio. But they have another specification you may see. Now, even though, for instance, you will find that filters vary in price, and the reason is you'll see sometimes that they offer a crystal filter with three or four poles. It'll say three or four poles, and or maybe six, two, or eight poles. What's the difference? And the answer is it is better, steeper skirts. In other words, if you look at the form, you'll see that the skirt is much sharper. Now, why? Because you will find that the filter that has, for instance, six pole over a four pole or an eight pole over six pole will have this better immunity. I guess that's the best word, immunity to strong signals. So that explains why that they are elaborate. And expensive crystal filters are more effective than a basic crystal filter. And you'll find that stuff in the 6 to 8 pole are costly. I've seen them at around $125 to $175, depending on the manufacturer they go over.
Yeah, I'm going to add a couple words to what Mel just said, and that is, when Mel's talking about a strong signal tolerance, he really means a strong signal that's on an adjacent frequency. Let's assume now that the ham radio operation was channelized. It's not, but let's assume. And you're on channel number 21 on 20 meters, and there's a guy on channel 20, and there's a guy on channel 22, and he's real loud to you. So, how steep are the skirts of your filter that's tuned to channel 21? How much rejection does the filter have on that frequency that's a little bit lower and frequency a little bit higher? As you add more poles, you go from 3 to 4 to 5 to 8 poles, the filter will have more total rejection capability, a steeper skirt, and if it was a good design, it might even have flatter response across the passband. The most ideal filter is flat across the passband, critically damped, not much ringing, very steep skirts, and a whole lot of decibels of rejection of the adjacent channel frequency. A real good filter might have 70, 80, 90 decibels of ultimate rejection. A three-pole filter might only have 50 dB of ultimate rejection. So if that signal on the adjacent channel is 70 dB above your noise, and your filter only has 40 decibels of reception, of rejection total, even though that signal's on the wrong frequency, it's going to come roaring through, give you splatter, and make the signal you want to listen to quite uncomfortable. So the more poles, the more capability, sharper filtering, and higher total amount of rejection of the frequencies of the adjacent channel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Very good, Dick. This is K2KEY. Yeah, now let's talk about, we just talked about crystal filters. I think we covered that fairly well. And now, like Rich had mentioned, the famous Collins mechanical filter. Now, the mechanical filter was developed by Collins back, I guess in the 50s. I remember seeing them start showing up in there in the 50s radios, and it was one of the big, great advances in radio communication. And as Dick just mentioned, one of the great advantages of the mechanical filter, for instance, if you have the 2.1 kilohertz filter, mechanical filter, and if you look at the response curve of it, if you put it in the radio and let's say that the base response at minus 60 kilohertz is somewhere around, say, 3.1 kilohertz, at minus 6 kilohertz, the 2.1 will bandwidth of it will be completely flat. Very nice skirts that are almost, if you look at it, almost vertical, and the top is almost flat across the 2.1 kilohertz response of it at minus 6K. So that is basically what you see in a mechanical filter. Now, how does it work? It's a very interesting concept of both really mechanical and electrical. You want to say some words about mechanical filters before I go into it, Dick? Over.
Yeah, the mechanical filter of the late 50s, and I think developed by Collins, uses piezoelectric material. It's quartz-like material that when you apply a voltage to it, the material changes its physical size, length, shape. It deflects in some way. It mechanically deflects when you put voltage on it. So you put your input signal to the input end of the filter. It mechanically stresses the material. The material physically moves. That sends a kind of acoustic shockwave down the material. And the material has a whole bunch of slots cut into it. And each one of those slots and the material connected to that slot has a kind of electromechanical resonance. So the good news about the mechanical filter, the Collins filter, is that once they get the design perfected, it's sort of like a cookie cutter, and they're, with cutting slots in this material and putting other little shunting wires in just the right spot, they're synthesizing a large number of poles. I don't know the number of poles in the Collins mechanical filters, but I'll bet you it was not three poles in general. I bet it was a large number of poles. The modern day equivalent, let me drop, of a filter which also uses electroacoustics is called a SAW filter, surface acoustic wave filter. These are usually on VHF, UHF frequencies, and there you could synthesize 30 poles, 30 individual tuned circuits all coupled together with a SAW filter. A Collins mechanical filter, I don't think the number of poles were anywhere near that high, but I'll bet you they were always above three, and if you told me they had 10 or 12 poles at times, I think I would believe it, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. There are 8 pole filters. The production runs of the 50s and continued on, and they still, I believe, using the 8 pole system. Now, a mechanical filter, as Dick was just talking about, a very interesting concept. It basically consists internally, let's talk about what's inside there and see why it works the way it does. It consists inside, basically, it has a metal rod in there, and it's precisely ground to the frequency with little metal rings, basically, along its length, and And then they have at the each end, they have these what they call transducers, which are made of permanent magnets and coils at each end, at both at the input and at the output. You have this. So each, in fact, each little metal ring along this rod that runs through the filter is really basically slightly different in size and actually vibrates on its own frequency of resonance. In other words, like a tuning fork. I think that's the best analogy. I just thought of that. It's like a tuning fork. I guess you remember a tuning fork. And so tell me about the drop. Also, it has to stay within the IF range and bandwidth of its specification. So the metal rod also vibrates at that IF range and bandwidth at that frequency. The transducer on the end is basically uses what we call electromagnetic action, and it actually induces a voltage, because it does have a permanent magnet in there, induces a voltage, and this is called the filtered IF signal. And if you listen to a mechanical filter, it is very, very natural sound. The old timers especially they say it all, there isn't any other filter that is quite as natural sounding, because I guess it's because of its construction. Now, you want to add to the stick? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just learned something. So you're telling me there is a permanent magnet and a coil of wire which starts the signal going down the mechanical filter, and then a similar reception device on the other end. So it is a miniature loudspeaker. I thought it was a piezoelectric material, and here I'm wrong. Apparently it's a dynamic loudspeaker. How about that? How about that? Dynamic? You know what I mean. But it's a miniature loudspeaker that actually starts the signal going down there. And so that signal going down there is an acoustic signal at 8 or 9 megahertz. Hard to believe that most people will call that frequency so high an RF frequency. But this is electromechanical energy, sound wave. And when a woman is getting a ultrasound because she's pregnant and you want to know if the child is healthy and male or female, that is a electromechanical device that's put against the stomach, and it either operates at 1 or 3 megahertz, again, acoustically, sends a sound wave into the bielectric material, looks for the echoes, and makes a picture out of it. So there's a degree of similarity between the operation of an ultrasound machine and these electromechanical filters. K2KEY, KQRIW.
Yes, most definitely. This is K2KEY. I remember once seeing a demonstration. Very interesting how they had a mechanical filter. You know, you can't take them apart without destroying them, really. But they made up for demonstration purposes, Colin. Have one that was put into a visible something. You can look into it and actually look at it, and it's fascinating how that was put together. Tremendous amount of extremely intelligent engineering and remembering. Remember, this is a lot of years ago, and still today has its place. If you can get the mechanical filter for what you want to use it for, I have it. My receivers, I have several of them, and I find overall they are what are to my ears, maybe because I'm, like my daughter always quotes, a dinosaur, to my ears the most natural sounding of filter that you could possibly have in a radio. All right, with the time left, let's talk about one other now that has come in, as Dick was alluding to, and that is DSP filters. Will DSP eventually take over and negate all these crystal filters, mechanical filters? Is this the story? And let me talk about, if you want, about DSP filters. First, you would like to say any words about it, Dick, before I get into it? Because I may be a little biased about DSP filters, over.
Yeah, a digital signal processing filter consists of your audio coming in from the microphone or wherever the source is, the radio's detector stage, and being converted into digital words. And then the digital words go through a very complicated program. The good news about a digital filter is that by changing the program, you can change the characteristics of the filter. And you can, by changing the program, you probably have the capability of making 20 different kinds of filter, dialing it in, so to speak. It is a science that has come a long way, has a lot of capability. Like all brand new sciences, it had a rocky beginning. The very first digital signal processing filters that were available sounded kind of yucky, didn't work super well. They were nice and compact, they were purely electronic, they were the modern age, but it had a rocky beginning. But ultimately, I see a rather golden future for that approach when it's done correctly. There are ways you can cut corners and make it kind of bad, but done correctly, I think it's got a lot of capability. See if Mel agrees on that. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Basically, we're going to say what I was just thinking. Yes, as Dick said, you got to be careful. There are a lot of the transceivers that are, well, I'd say middle-of-the-road transceivers, and they're offering, you know, DSP additions. Now, the problem with those DSP units that they're putting in, you get a situation where there's a compromise. I guess that's where it's used, a compromise with DSP filters, and because strong signals usually just blow right through them. And so if the DSP system is very good, if it's designed correctly, but you have, this is a little on the technical side, and a lot of people may not understand this, but you must know whether, and not the, my opinion, the ones that work somewhat, what I would call real well, have DSP integrated into the front end of the radio, or first IF stages. Otherwise, what you have is a compromise. You know, it's obvious that that a lot of these add-on type of DSP filters that they've come up. Let me let it drop. That they've come up with are well. Let's put it this way: the best word I just thought of it. The dynamic range is compromised, really, with the DSP filters, like, unless they are, like I just said, at the beginning of the radio. There's add-ons after that where they would substitute it instead of the crystal filter. A DSP type is many times not what you're going to look for in a receiver improvement. You want to take a dick over?
Yep, you got to be a little careful when you buy a DSP type. The digital signal processing process, the very first step per se, is the analog to digital converter. And there are A to D converters and there are A to D converters. An old-fashioned analog to digital converter might have 8 bits of capability. That means it's got 256 amplitude states. A 10-bit A to D has 1,024 amplitude states. A 16-bit analog to digital converter has got, I think it's 64,000 possible states. Obviously, the more bits in the analog to digital converter and the more bits in the digital to analog converter, which is at the back end of the system, the more bits, it costs more. So you got a compromise going on here between cost and dynamic range. The more the bits, and if they're really working for you, give you more amplitude states, that means you get more fidelity, and you get more dynamic range. So when you pay for the extra bits, you're getting finer and finer resolution. You can reproduce that waveform with higher fidelity. Let me drop. And the difference between the strongest signal and the weakest signal that your system can tolerate gets to more and more range. That's the good news. The bad news, the more bits cost more money on the converters, cost more money on the microprocessor that's running the program, may make it run slower. So there's a bunch of compromises of cost versus performance. Some of the early ones weren't very good at tolerating strong signals. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Exactly. You just hit the nail on the head. The early ones and all and some of the compromised ones just don't hit the nail on the head, really, when it comes to what you think you're going to get out of them. And you'll find only in the more pricey transceivers where they have taken the steps to really install the DSP, not as a plug-in additive, but as that thing that is part of the circuitry, that you really find the effective use of DSP type of filters. So if you, again, you get your pay for it, and also that's your selection now. I think we've covered filters pretty much. This is what's available now. Again, it's hot. It's like, I think it's like the old days of stereos. You can't buy by the advertisements. You got to go in the store or whatever and listen with your own ears to the speakers, to the stereo and all, because the price on it is not the whole criteria, Dick. Over.
True. You got to choose a good brand. You got to choose a brand that the lab reports say good things about it. You got to choose a brand where your buddies say, I've owned one, I've used it for 6 months, I love it. And even if the guy doesn't completely love it, I like it here, here, and here, but once in a while I get this little glitch. Maybe that glitch is not so bad. I think we got 1 minute left before they're going to close down the machine. You guys have just listened to TechNet number 1,218 of the series that began way back in 1982. If Mel and I are in good shape next week, we'll be back and try to cover more of this jazz. 73, you all, do try to be kind to each other. You got it, Mel.
Very good, Dick. 73 to you. Everybody on the TechNet, thank you for your encouragement. And as Dick said, we'll try to do it again next week. This is K2KEY. Good morning, or, well, just about good morning to everybody. And we'll talk to you next week, hopefully.